Hi, my name's Rick Sutley. I'm an Elkie. And I come prepared again. Notes and books. And my memory isn't what it should be. Alcohol damaged more than my spirit. Step three. Came to believe. Check. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And the reading that whoever it was, Dave read out of the Daily Reflection on page 283. There's a little letter below that Bill W. wrote. And it says, in the late stages of our drinking, the will to resist has fled. Yet when we admit complete defeat, and when we become entirely ready to try AA principles, our obsession leaves us and we enter a new dimension and freedom under God as we understood Him. Now that was just a coincidence that the exact reading I picked was the Daily Reflection today. I can't arrange stuff like that. And what I've learned is that the first two steps are a lot about acceptance, a little bit of thinking, or a lot of thinking. And step three is the first step where we actually do some action. And that action is, first, made a decision. You know, we make decisions all the time. Paper or plastic, you know. There's a thousand decisions that we don't even think about. This one takes, I believe, some thought. We're about to do something that we're probably not sure is going to work. But you guys say it works, so I'll try it. And that's how I started. I was fake it till you make it. And I did that in a lot of issues. Then I got to think about what's my will in my life? What really is that? And the thought being that up until the point when I came to AA, it was a mess. Self-will. That's what it was. Self-will run riot. That was a very good example of that. And to do something different, to try AA principles. And then the third part is to, under the care of God as we understood Him. It says that willingness is the key. It can start very slowly. Put that key in that lock and you may just push that door open a little bit. And it shows that path that we refer to. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And that's when you swallow hard. You know, coming to realize that this is no small task. The one thing I needed was recognizing the truth about me. I was unfamiliar with the truth when I first got here, and I was unsure that I would be able to do this because I was just so damn dishonest. And you guys said, don't worry, we were like that too. I said, oh, that makes me feel a lot better. And the thing I need to recognize is the truth about myself and why I need help. It isn't just alcohol, you guys told me. It's much more than just alcohol. I wrote down some things that I'm sure everybody had some familiarity with. Blackouts. Just to get the ball rolling. I didn't even know what one was, but I'm glad they had a name for it, because now I can say I was in a blackout. Cheap lies. Cheap lies. I told cheap lies. If they gave records for dead batteries and flat tires to explain my lateness getting home, I'd be right up there. But you were a pretty tough bunch, though. I don't know. Weak alibis. Weak. You know, my wife, and I talked to her last week. I told her what I said up here. We've been married for 46 years, and about 15 of them in good. And she said, you know, that's about right. That's on me. That's on me. I couldn't believe she said that. I was unfamiliar with self-criticism, looking at myself. I was always great looking at you guys. It just seemed so natural. And it's one of the things that you start asking in here. There's a lot about self. Self-pity, self-contempt, things that I was unfamiliar with. But self-criticism was going to take a while. And as they told me, right after step three, you're going to start self-criticizing yourself and see where that goes. False pride. Look at me. Look at me. I was so special in my own mind. In my own mind. As I was writing this list, I wrote selfish twice. That's probably not an error that I put selfish on there twice. I didn't care about others. It was what I wanted to do, and when I wanted to do it, and how I was going to do it. I didn't know when I first heard that. That's being selfish? That's being self-centered? I was unfamiliar with some of them words. Hell, most of those words. And it just so happens that I like rock music. And AC/DC has a song called Highway to Hell. That's where I was going. And they also have a song called Walk All Over You. And that was what I was doing. I was walking all over everybody. My wife, my daughter, my friends, my employer. And a lot of this stuff takes you back, you know. It keeps you quiet for a while, because that's just a part of what needs to be worked on. And self-centered. I stole this from somebody. I steal everything from somebody. Says, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. You know, when I would crawl out of bed in the morning and rush to work, I'd usually do a little something to pick me up and And when I would get to work, I would still smell alcohol. And a few times somebody would say, "Hey, you know, did somebody spill a beer in here?" It's like, would you guys shut up? And I was thinking about when I was going to get out of work, whether it be at noontime, I had a half hour lunch, but that'd be just enough to drink a quart and get back to work. And that lit the fuse. I didn't know it, but that lit the fuse. And then I started looking forward to 3:30. Or if I worked overtime, 7:30. That's a long time to wait for a drink you've been thinking about all day. And just, I was so clueless. When we worked overtime and got a meal ticket, he went up to the canteen. It had terrible food, but we ate it. And I was eating some soup, but the table full of guys that I work with. And I said, "Look at these spoons. They're so wobbly." I was spilling this soup all over, and I can only imagine what they thought. And it was late in the day, and I had that. Oh my God! And then people at the club, mostly old timers, real old timers, they would walk up to me after a meeting and say, "When are you going to get honest, kid?" And then they'd walk away. "Hey, wait a second. I want to talk to you. What do you mean?" I thought I was getting honest. And those kind of nudges were very powerful for me eventually. Because enough people said it, I figured there was a reason. It was tough for me to get honest. Today it's a bit easier. A large bit easier. I drank alcohol to excess freely. I started drinking when I was 17. And we went up through New York, and then we come back to PA, and then I was legal. I went in the service. Drinking was like a game in there. And I enjoyed those games. I was out of control, even at that early age. I can see that I was trying to put as much into me as I possibly could. Because I liked how it made me feel. I didn't know that I was trying to rub out reality. That's what I was doing. The things I just talked about are all to prove that I need help, not just with alcohol. All those things, selfishness, self-centeredness. Somewhere in here it says we have to give our selfish and self-centeredness to God and let Him take care of that. So easy to say, but when you're giving it your first attempt, it's far from easy. And that's where that fake it till you make it thing comes in. And I needed a complete knowledge of what I had done to myself physically, mentally, and spiritually. I was injured deeply. The tests all looked good on the physical aspect. Nothing wrong with my liver, but there was an effect. You can't drink that long and that hard and not have some brain cells disappear. I had a few disappear. And spiritual, I was clueless about a spiritual injury. You know, how do you do that? But I started to learn. You guys were very good teachers. And once my sponsor started sending me to 12 and 12s and big books meetings, that was when things started to sound different. It wasn't my version of what it says in the book. It's other people's versions of what it says in the book and what they believe today. And boy, was I wrong. I was wrong a lot. And then the little comments like, it's time to grow up, kid. It's time to grow up, kid. I drank for 17 years. I started at 17. I got done when I was 34. And this was the furthest thing from my mind that night. I was not going to AA. I was going to a bar. And God has a way of interrupting our journey. However you got here, whether your wife insisted, your employer, or you came to realize that this wasn't going to be able to keep going. And some very powerful words from the big book. We have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's a powerful statement. I thought we couldn't recover. We're always going to be alcoholics. But we can recover from a hopeless state of mind and body. And that's a reality that has come true. My mental state's at question at times. Step three is very personal. Your sponsor can talk to you about it. You can go to all those step meetings you want. But when it comes down, it's you making a decision. And a decision that sounds nearly impossible. How in the heck do you do that? They said, remember that key? That's the willingness. That's what you got to be, the willingness to start. At least open up that door a little bit, take a look in there and see what you might find. And I didn't get it all at once. One day I was, hallelujah, this is it. I said hell though, I think. I had to learn to accept my situation. Not yours, mine. And I kept hearing people say, nobody gets here by accident. And today I realize that. People don't just wake up saying, man, I just had a great night. I think I'll go join AA. It's far from it. And God has a way of showing us before we're ready. He has a way of putting up a roadblock, putting two parked cars in front of you, and a telephone pole. But who's counting, you know? They said that this is a very powerful and progressive disease. It never gets better. It only gets worse. And you guys are just full of good news. Every time I turn around, something else. And you know, when someone's sick, as they consider alcoholism to be a disease, and that helped me, that thought of it's a disease, yeah. In the beginning, that helped me get over one hurdle. See, that doesn't sound so bad. And when a drunk comes in AA and he starts to get it, and then if he goes back out, people don't say, oh, that poor guy, that's so sad. That's what they say when you have cancer. That's so sad. They don't say that when you're a drunk. So that's pitiful. And a lot of other words. And as I was preparing this, ever since I've been sober, I always hear people say, we got to move it from here to here. 18-inch move, they say. And the only original thought I have for tonight is, it felt like my heart had to convince my brain that this was what to do. And that might be backwards, but that worked for me. Because you guys were powerful. People would lead, and they would say things that'd be tugging at my heart. You know, I mean, just bring a tear to my eye. And I was like, this is powerful stuff. And eventually, that's the way it fell to me. My mind had to be brought along. You know, like they say, keep showing up, your mind will catch up. I'm waiting. There's a thing. It wasn't supposed to be funny. This is serious stuff. One of the things I learned is about relaxing. So often in early sobriety, our heads are spinning, thinking about 30 different things at once. And we got to go to work. We got to come home. We have to do normal things. The normal things that I said, that's for somebody else. I didn't like normal. Well, AA is not normal either. It is a step above my belief. And relaxation and prayer. I need sometimes to get a quiet time. And at work, I was involved in a lot of things, and that doesn't even matter what it is. But sometimes we'd be discussing things, and the boss would say, this is what that is, and there ain't nothing you can do about it. And that saying that they told me is, step away, go say a prayer, take some slow, deep breaths, and then go back in there, you know, let's get rid of that. And that was real useful, because I used to get pissed off a lot, especially at work. I mean, it says we should relax when we're upset, angry, impatient. Grocery lines come to mind, you know. Come on. Resentful. We started to learn what those are. I had a lot of resentments. When I was bored, it was time to... Because a bored brain goes places that you don't want to go. Or if you're exhausted, your brain is just not working right. And that was true of me. And I don't know if it was last week or one of the weeks I talked about when I was new and I'd be walking down, that's because I didn't have a driver's license, could I have a second DUI, I'd be walking down the street and all of a sudden there'd be this thought pop into my mind, And it's what they call stinking thinking, you know? I said, well, how in the hell did that get in there? And I thought I learned it. I did. I learned what to do. And I learned it on the last page of step 3. It says, if I can find it, in all times of emotional disturbance or indecision, we can pause, ask for quiet, and in stillness say the serenity prayer. I repeated that serenity prayer so many times in my first year. And what would commonly happen, I'd be walking in and I'd say, what the hell am I still saying this prayer for? Whatever it was, it was gone. And that was really great. Because I wasn't very good at dealing with that committee, you know, that all that buzzing and stuff. We come to know self-pity. I had no idea that I was one of those. When I got fired from work, got a 6-month suspension, I'd go to the bars near work, and guys would walk in the door and says, hey Rick, I'll buy you a drink, them sons of guns. They fired you, you know? Here. And I said, yeah, they did, you know. Feeling sorry for myself. And I was full of self-pity. I was full of fear. I was full of fear when I was drinking. I was full of fear in here. Because you guys started to ask quite a bit. Intolerance, resentments, vindictiveness, dishonest. And all of those things insulate us from God. So it's no wonder when I was drinking that God was in my past. Just never came to mind. He came to mind my first day in detox at St. Vincent Hospital when it became obvious what this whole picture looked like. Total abstinence, meetings, say prayers. When I was walking back to my room that night, my first day in detox, out of nowhere, I said, God, you're going to have to help me, because this thing's about going to take a miracle. And that was my true belief, as well as today. For me to not drink for a period of time, who'd ever guess? My wife was unsure whether I would do this. Guys at work, when I got out of rehab, they says, didn't you overreact a little bit? Go to rehab? And that was a good question, you know. But my mind said, you better do this. And being stubborn, that helps. I said, okay, I'm going to do this. What do I got to do? And they said, well, here we go. And you know, the first 2 steps, no one's going to say they're easy. But the 3rd step, that was another much more giant step. And one of the things I learned, I already mentioned this, we surrender our self-centeredness to Him. Now, I didn't think that was going to work, but I kept saying those kinds of things. And sooner or later, I started to believe a little. And I said, you know, I'll give this a little bit more effort, because this sure takes effort. And again, very, very personal. Somebody can talk at you till they're blue in the face, but it comes down to your belief Are you an alcoholic? Do you need this kind of help? And the answer seemed to be yes, yes, and yes. Step three. In fact, the effectiveness of the whole AA program will rest upon how well and earnestly we have tried to come to a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. The effectiveness of the whole program. The big book's filled with statements like that. At first glance, I missed them. And the words are powerful. It depends on how well and earnestly you do this. It seemed as though they were throwing a marker down. That's what you got to do. Be patient. Nobody gets it all at once. Keep coming to meetings. Try and pray. Try to think about what your picture of God is. And my picture of God changed when I came to AA. It just did. All I know is that I'm thoroughly blessed to have arrived and been given the opportunity to see these things and hear them. And you guys were very persuasive. You talked me into a lot of stuff. Thank God you did. Thank God you did. I wouldn't willingly do a lot of these things. And I must say, I told my sponsor, this has been as great as anything you're going to get out of it. It has helped me to look at myself again and see where those early steps were the beginning of a whole new life. But you don't know that when you first get here. You just think, oh boy, dull, boring, and stupid. And I found out it's anything but. It says again and again, we absolutely insist upon enjoying life. And that's what I like to do. Thanks for being here tonight.
Okay, now we come for question and answers. Any questions?
You know I had to. You mentioned, I know the answer to this already, but I want to ask this question. You mentioned your conception of God changed. From what to what?
From basically the God I believed in when I was in Catholic schools. The nuns beating my head against the blackboard into that thing that holds the holy water. When you misbehave in church, bam! Punishing, unforgiving. You guys taught me about the loving, the forgiving, the powerful. That's the best I can describe it, Jim. My sobriety date is March 8th, 1988. Once I got here, I never left. And like I've heard say, it's a whole lot easier to get sober and stay sober than it is to keep getting sober. Everybody has their own path. That's what I know. Don't ever give up on anybody. Learn that lesson the hard way.
Hey, thanks, Rick. I have a question regarding the third step in sponsorship. How do you approach that as a sponsor and help the person that you're working with come to the conclusion that you said that you came to? How do you guide them along that process, or do you have like a timetable?
No timetable, I'll tell you that.
Okay.
I guess one of the things that I look at is how willing do they appear to be? Are they just showing up and being mad and not really wanting to learn anymore? That would be like a stop. Let's see what happened in the last step. Maybe you need to go back to that last one. That's what my sponsor told me. But it's such a personal decision on anybody that I'm working with. I can tell them all the good stuff, all the stuff that I think I know, and they'll look at you like, it's got to be a personal decision, and there's only one person that can make that for yourself.
Well, my name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Paul.
Rick, I had talked to you a little bit about this before the meeting, but I'm just going to reiterate something and ask a question. They say that you have to be willing to do the right thing every time. That's that little statement. And, you know, I struggle with that. In your experience, experience with this step, at what point in time do you feel that you gave it over to that degree?
I think I was still trying to work on that third step completely while I was doing the fourth and the fifth. I didn't have it all bundled up in a nice package. It took me a while. And I don't even know when that locked in, you know. And there's four absolutes that aren't really part of AA. And those are things that we strive for. If you try and be perfect, you're going to be disappointed, because none of us are. I don't know if that got to your question. But as my wife said, after tonight, just 9 more weeks. Ay, ay, ay.
I got one more question. I'm bringing up the past. And somebody asked a question about how would you describe that. Remember when we would go on 12-step calls and we would walk in and there'd be a new guy, and you would say when about the difference between trying it somebody else's way and trying it your way, how was that working out for you? That was your favorite saying. When the guy would say, I don't know if this is going to work. Well, how is what you're doing now working for you? It's not.
See, your brain wasn't as damaged as mine.
But that's a powerful statement, you know. And I think it's important to remember. That's why they always tell us, you know, you got to remember where you came from. And I'm lucky. I'll remember this stuff for you as you go along.
Okay, so. Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Rick. I'm Bridget. I'm an alcoholic.
Nice to meet you, Bridget.
Nice to meet you. I don't remember ever meeting you. Maybe I have, but I really appreciated the soft, easy way that you described this evening. And you gave so many examples from your life and your view of what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about and how reluctant you were in the beginning, because it sounds so unbelievable. But, you know, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. That is so true. How long do you think, coming in at 34, it took you to get a handle on what this was about? Or was it more like you said, that your heart, you just kind of knew you had to keep going and your head didn't really get it yet? Did it take a period of time for you to wrap your mind around?
I'm going to be honest, which I guess I should be.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You guys have all these rules.
Tell us a lie.
But I honestly think the whole package probably took me 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, well, I appreciate you saying that, because there's so many things that I have yet to learn and to appreciate. It's something that I find it's like it's an exploration that I'm constantly on and looking for the meaning of whatever that might be. And that's why I'm here tonight, is to hear somebody such as yourself, your perception of the steps. But I want to thank you. It was really very, very helpful tonight.
Thank you. You guys say the nicest things.
Anyone else?
Can we find you on that?
All right, good job.
All right.
You're welcome.